Hi, everybody. I, Coleman here, the usual host of the Hey Poor podcast. But I'm not hosting it this week. Why? Because this week is E3, and we figured it's probably the only thing you guys want to hear about, so we're skipping the usual game talk, audience questions, news talk, etc., in favor of an episode that is completely focused on E3, the E3 extravaganza. And we also figured you probably don't want to hear about it from Anthony and I, who maybe caught a couple of the live streams and weren't actually there. You'd want to hear about it from Jay and Nathan, and if they can get them, Francis and Mike, who are the Hey Poor Player team, who are actually at E3 right now as I'm speaking. But maybe not when you're listening to this. It depends when you're listening to this. Anyway, no one cares about that. The point is that my usual co-host, Jay Petriquin, is going to be taking over for this special E3 episode. Don't get any ideas, Jay. I will and can kill you in your sleep. Just to repeat, I will and can kill you in your sleep. And with that, that's all I have to say. I'll pop back in a little later for a commercial break. But until then, take it away, Jay. Let's hear that sweet, sweet faux chiptune music.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Hey Poor Podcast. I am not the suave and handsome I, Coleman. I'm the suaver and handsomer original host, Jay Petriquin.
So handsome.
With me, I have Hey Poor Player Editor-in-Chief, Francis DiPersio.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
I have Hey Poor Player Video Man and Kawaii Mascot, Nathaniel Terencio. And I have suave and all-around handsome good man, Mike Vito.
I'm too old for this shit.
And we just went through the first 2 days of E3 2017. It was going to be just the first one day, but then things happened. Certain members of our staff passed out.
I jerked suddenly up from my desk and had
so, Francis DiPersio, our good editor-in-chief, you were in the middle of writing
your Yakuza 6 preview.
Yeah. And he sort of just got up. Turn around from the desk in the hotel room. We're at a lovely hotel here in Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, and if you were watching the video, you can definitely see us at a table outside of a hotel room.
I forgot to say that.
It was beautiful out here.
Because you told me to right before we started.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, so Frank just gets up, turns around, looks at the bed, and just, I would describe it as like a kid on a sled hitting the end of a snowbank.
That's kind of
the velocity situation you had going, just shoom.
I don't remember a damn thing.
Yeah, you really don't.
I slept like a baby.
You also didn't remember singing a bunch. Yeah. You were drunk on spicy Thai food.
That's what it was, a Thai food murder.
Oh, yeah, he had spicy curry. And it destroyed him.
I'm used to
him.
East Coast spicy curry.
Yeah, you see
West Coast spicy curry.
That California curry,
it had me. And I died inside. But here I am.
And outside.
I was resurrected like a phoenix. I persevered for another day of E3, and so far so good. I'm awake now.
Yeah.
I'm not singing yet. So.
Not yet, which is a day of crying shame.
Which is incredible, because we just got back from this amazing party for MX4D
at
the Chinese Theater in Hollywood.
We went to Hollywood. It was a very... Yeah. Unique experience for all of us.
So many people gave us the rock star treatment, and thank you, Media Nation. It was amazing.
Yeah, thank you. We enjoyed your open bar and your several people cosplaying as Tracers.
So many Tracers.
Yeah,
they were everywhere.
There were at least five. There were at least five Tracers.
And they were all very pretty.
They're all very pretty and very nice.
Thank you, pretty Tracers.
All women are queens.
All women are queens. All men are pigs. but hey, we're the king pigs of this bar, and we call heypoorplayer.com.
Yep.
Ooh, do that again later. Wait until I'm in bed with Nathan later. then come doing that. God. So, we want to do some talking about E3, about what we've been seeing, what we've been playing, what we've been enjoying. We've been around the show floor a bunch. We've been doing some events, some meetings with particular studios.
Yeah.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
I'm going to go. I'm going to start off because I'm looking at you. What are some of your highlights of what we've done in the first couple of days of E3?
Well, I think the highlight for me today was probably Moss, actually.
Yeah. So you were saying that, and it honestly surprised me.
Yeah.
That was you and Mike went to that while Nathan and I were trying and failing getting some other stuff, and you came back really excited about
Moss
it.
Moss is an upcoming PSVR title developed by PolyArk. They're a new studio. We went and checked it out today, and it's a pretty cool premise.
Yeah.
Essentially, you guide this lovely little mouse here, Quill, little mouse and swordsman, cute little guy, you guide him around this beautiful fantasy world. You function, well, it's a VR game. You yourself are seeing it in first person as the camera, overlooking this world, you know, but you still manipulate Quill in a third person, moving him around with your joystick and your action buttons to attack. And at first, it's cool because you start out above this pond and you're just looking out, and Quill comes up and waves to you, and you look down, and then you realize you're not just a camera, and you see your eerie masked reflection in the lake.
Ah.
And it's such a cool sensation. It looks straight out of like Studio Ghibli. It's great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you start exploring this world, and you know, at first, again, you think you're just kind of like this fixed camera. But you yourself, while manipulating Quill, can reach out and grab objects in the environment to help him platform across. Like, you'll find a spire with all these doors in it that you have to manipulate by moving your DualShock controller and grabbing it, or to navigate him through these doorways, or pick up monsters and put them on pressure plates to get them through. And it starts out, it's pretty simple, but you get this sensation. It's really similar to Shadow of the Colossus, or
okay,
The Last Guardian, where it kind of transcends feeling like a camera, and you actually start to forge a relationship with this creature. When it's wounded, you reach out to heal it, and you can feel his heartbeat in your controller.
Oh, wow.
As you're healing him. And it's
such that's really cool.
It's a cool and trippy sensation. When he, at the very end of the demo, this giant snake appears, and he looks right at the camera, looking you in the eye for protection.
Right.
And in that moment, you feel like you just want to jump in front of this snake and, like, protect him. And it's so cool, and it feels so natural, and I don't know, like, the art style is just so incredibly atmospheric.
Yes.
Mike, you played it. What did you think of it?
Everything feels alive. With your DualShock in your hand, you can actually move the DualShock around the environment, and everything reacts to your movements. Like, if there's dust particles in the air, those dust particles will move away from
leaves
your controller.
Leaves will blow on the ground.
The leaves, just feels like alive and...
Splash water and, around from lakes.
When me and Frank were both playing, we were in separate rooms playing this game, we didn't know, we had no idea what each other was saying, but we both commented that the game literally gave us goosebumps while we were playing. Like, it was that immersive, and you really felt for
it. It was beautiful.
Will.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Nice. Yes.
I mean, it looked like something out of Pixar, and I have a feeling we probably both came at the same moment where you just goose flesh on the back of your neck and everything clicks.
Yep.
And again, you're forging that bond with the character, and the world is just so beautiful and rich and just pulls you in. And I don't know. The play session was about 15 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
It's already near top of the show for me. So
wow.
It's definitely the top
for me.
Wow.
And the Polyarch guys were super cool, they explained everything really well to us. They were super
I kind of wish I went to that, because, like, from what you're, like, making of the game, it sounds incredible.
And again, it was when we were deciding on stuff this morning. Like, I know you and I were both kind of like, oh, this seems cool, but neither of us really know much about the studio. Like, no one was really that committed to it. I'm a lot more interested in what they're doing with this game now that you guys have sort of come forth and pitched this.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it releases this holiday season. That's their target release.
Okay, cool.
Exclusively for the PlayStation VR.
I
encourage everybody to check it out when it comes out, because if this early slice is any indication of what to expect, this is going to be something really special that you're going to want to play.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Cool, man.
Cool. Jay or Mike, do either of you want to go next?
Take it, Jay.
Jay, go ahead.
So now that we talked about this heartfelt VR game, I don't mind talking about some cartoon bullshit.
Oh, before we continue, if you're watching this video and you are hearing cars, it's because we're literally right next to a road, so...
Yeah, we're right outside of a lovely
hotel. We literally are outside of a hotel, and there is a bunch of cars driving right now. It doesn't matter that it's 11 p.m. It's L.A.
We
wanted to be outside. It's nice and comfortable.
It's nice out here right now.
We've been inside all day for the last 2 days.
It's either this or a dirty hotel room, so...
Yes.
We saved you.
It's a fine hotel room. What's that hotel room ever done wrong?
You're the dirtiest thing in that hotel room.
I am the dirtiest thing in that hotel room.
No, we heard you in that bathroom.
Dude, we ate pretty bad today.
No, we did. First day when we all got into L.A., we ate really amazing Korean barbecue. I know you said, like, one of the best meals you've had.
At the Seoul Palace.
Palace was amazing.
Yeah.
Yesterday we had really good Thai food and really good Mediterranean food.
No, that was mean Thai food.
You
had the curry.
We had the good Thai, sweet, nice boy of the family Thai food. You had the renegade.
I had the abusive grandfather Thai food.
Yeah, you had the daddy's gonna get the belt.
Daddy got the belt.
Yeah, daddy got the belt.
I couldn't sit down. Yeah.
And then today we just ate, Pollo Loco, which is just Taco Bell for here, and,
And we had, they had In-N-Out.
Yeah, I forgot the name.
I'm from the West Coast, so I know what In-N-Out is. They didn't never had it. I think Jay had it once.
Yeah, I've been told it was a competitor for Five Guys. It's not. Five Guys is still better in every way. But you get a better deal at In-N-Out, so that's nice.
Yeah, it was cheaper.
We're from Delaware, so we just wanted to, you know,
get it. It was an experience. I liked it a lot.
I'm a New York boy, so it's the New York versus California thing.
Yeah, my West Coast homies. It's okay. I know what they're saying is heresy, but, like... Just cut them some slack. They're from the East Coast.
We did try the secret menu.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's true.
Animal style
fries. I spoiled
fries.
The secret.
It is like the greasy fast food gods bakaki into your fries. It is delicious.
So my current favorite thing I got to play at the show is one that anyone who follows me on Twitter will probably have called coming. Same to you, Mr. Truck. and that would be the new Steven Universe game. We got to go and check out some stuff at Cartoon Network's section. We had a meeting with them where you got to play the OKKO game. I keep calling it OKKO.
OKKO. That's the joke.
Let's Play Heroes. Yeah. And then I got to play the new Steven Universe game, Save the Light, which is the sequel to a iOS and Android Steven Universe game called Attack the Light, which I played a little of and I knew of. I didn't play a lot of that because it was kind of just a...
Yeah, I think both were very surprising to both of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, as both of us, as people who have played Cartoon Network games and was legitimately surprised by the depth of both games.
Well, because when you think of Cartoon Networks making game of something, you think of the era where every movie and cartoon would get a kind of shill tie-in game that wasn't really
much
of
fair.
Anything. And we're mostly past that point now.
Well, at least for Cartoon Network games. Yeah.
I want to say the last horrible example we got was maybe the Legend of Korra game Platinum made a few years back. And even then, that was Platinum. That could have been something better. But we're past that era where you get that stuff. But still... You don't think, oh, Cartoon Network's making this game and think, oh, it's going to be really good. But this new game is a very legitimate RPG. It's not reinventing every single RPG mechanic, but it's a tactical, it's semi-turn-based where over time enemies are moving towards you and you're charging up these points that you can spend on different attacks. Some would be maybe you're Amethyst and you can do a big sweeping attack that'll hit all enemies within a radius, and that's 3-star points, or you can up your own attack for 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
And every minute, every 60 seconds, I honestly forget the exact timing, every little bit this meter will fill up and you'll get 5 more stars.
Yeah.
And there's some characters that can accelerate the speed at which you get more. And each character is very much tooled around different stuff, so at the beginning in the first game it was just Steven and the 3 gems, Pearl, Armrest, Squidward, Pearl, Amethyst, and Darnet, who were sort of your main 4. Here you start out with Steven, Greg, who is his dad, who is the bard character because he plays a guitar. It's amazing. And then his friend Connie, who is this swordsman who carries a sword as large as she is. And then you get to choose one of the 3 gems who sort of become your 4th member for a while. I picked Amethyst.
Yeah.
And basically how that goes is we're told, oh, so this character is your wide sweeper. This character is your one who can power themselves up and do a lot of damage. It is class-based. Everyone is kind of their own class in the way of an early Final Fantasy where all right, this is the bard. This is the kind of mixed healer and attacker. This is the buff distributor. And we know there's going to be... either 8 or 9 total playable characters in this. I honestly forget the exact number.
Yeah.
There's 3 in your party at a time?
Four.
Because
it was Steven, Connie, Greg, and Amethyst, and then later Pearl came out, and I switched Amethyst out with Pearl.
Yeah.
So you're fighting these monsters in Beach City that are based on stuff from the first game. You're sort of learning this story where there's some mysterious thing that's captured this sort of prism alien thing from the first game that is being used for malevolent purposes at some point. You fight a giant wood chipper alien and it's terrifying.
Dave. You have the option to name him.
You get some fun option stuff. So one thing the game does is, because Steven is very much the type of character in the show, and this is why I said anyone who follows me, I love Steven Universe, the show. I'm a big follower. I like to follow cartoons that are out now in general, just because I'm curious how that evolves and whatnot. We were talking about anime.
We were
talking about My Hero. I like to follow all that stuff, and so I do watch the show, and Wow, I honestly... No, I'm sorry. I just based on my own sentence there.
You were good.
And so something about the show is Steven, the main character, is very much this, like, wants everyone to get along and be happy and all this stuff.
Yeah.
He's that kind of person. The way that's reflected in the game is that there will be times where one of the characters asks how you want to handle a situation or if you want to ride a cool motorcycle, and who doesn't.
The only podcast with motorcycles.
I know, it's crazy. Wow, that picked up really audacity. But you'll be like sort of prompted, how do you want to approach a situation? Do you want to cautiously deal with these enemies, or do you want to barrel right in? If you're saying something to appease Amethyst and build a relationship closer with her, because that's the thing you can do, you'll be like, yeah, let's barrel right in. Amethyst will be like, well, I'm Amethyst, so I of course want to do this. And so there's some fun little choice stuff. And when you do that, you get bonus relationship points with those characters who build up towards you being able to do combos with those characters.
Yeah.
It builds up towards some cool skill tree stuff you're able to do. And part of that, too, is there's choices when it comes to, like, yeah. So then you fight this boss near the end of the... this boss that's Frank drinking a lot of beer.
Yeah.
You fight this boss near the end of this demo that is this giant, like, wood chipper alien robot, and you get to name him. Of course, we named him Dave.
Yeah,
options. It was two long things, and then just Dave.
Like, really ominous names.
Yeah.
And you said Steven probably would have called him
would
Dave.
Would have absolutely called him Dave.
Yeah, I did think that too.
That our good friend Steven Universe would have named this large alien Dave. But so, yeah, and like, during that battle, like, so there's a lot of directional stuff going on, right? Because there's a lot of, like, oh, you can hit enemies in this radius. Steven was a healer straight up in the iOS game, but in this one he is part healer, part attacker, so, like, he can do that charging thing where if you attack an enemy that's behind another enemy, it'll just bolt through both of them.
Yeah.
Later you get Pearl, who can do a similar thing with her spear. And so there's a lot of, like, directional strategy as opposed to keeping in mind who's what, where, and coming from where.
But also, he could be a combination of both. But...
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the
and
point.
The stat points, like, they even mentioned that, like, you can build these characters in a certain way just based on the stat
points. I was talking more about the fusion.
In that final big battle, Steven and Connie, who, for people who don't watch the show, fusion is a big part of the show. These gem characters can fuse with one another and become these other characters.
They just bump ugly. So
I mean, basically, there's a few real sexual
ones. They're children.
But so Steven is half human, and so his human friend Connie, who carries this giant sword, can fuse with him, and they become Stevani, who's this cool teenager who fights stuff real well. They just, two 12-year-olds become a single 18-year-old. Yeah. That's how life works.
Yeah.
And so, we were able to do that in that final battle, which was a kind of a cool risk reward, because on one hand, you're combining two characters into one much stronger character. On the other, you're losing some of the benefits of both of those characters, because, like, Connie is very, like, buff-focused. She can study to, like, raise her attack really high. Steven's got healing power and shield power on top of the attack power. You're losing those, and you have one fewer people in your party. So that boss battle is actually really tricky, because I had to think...
She could bubble more, too, though, couldn't she?
What?
Stevani could bubble, like, two characters.
Yeah, no, she could.
Yeah, she had a combination of, like, Steven's, like, more defensive abilities with Connie's, like, aggressive abilities.
It was cool. They did a good job of combining some of that stuff, but still it's like, oh, I have one fewer, you know, pieces on the playing field, so I need to think differently, especially in a boss where... So how that boss worked was, like, characters were sort of coming out of the background into the foreground. There were more characters, more enemies who I had to fight as things were going on, because they were feeding logs into this giant wood chipper, and as a...
It was getting intense.
It was getting really...
There was a lot of characters going, definitely.
I'll be honest, I was really worried I was going to lose, because I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of my friends and colleagues.
I did lose at a game today, so don't worry.
Yeah,
but you had it on hard.
I'll explain that later.
It's okay.
I did too at Metronomicon. It's this really intense battle, and there's, you know, again, there's relationship points that let you do team up attacks. I didn't get to use it, but I saw there's one with Greg and Steven where, like, I guess Steven whips out his ukulele and they just do, like, a power jam.
Yeah, that's cute.
Which
that's
is
really
real
cute.
Stevani's is just this button masher ammo thing. There's all these skill trees and everything as well where, like, as you build up these relationship points, those points can be sped towards different trees. So the one that he showed us in the demo was Steven's, where there's one track where you can upgrade his luck, so sometimes at random, once you get to a certain stage, it'll randomly heal whoever you're trying to heal for, like, 200% more than it would normally. And then, as you get higher, like, just the ratio, you know, rates just increase more. And there's different attacks you can unlock as you go before. There's a lot of nuance to, like...
Yeah.
they actually put time and effort into putting these systems in place, into, like, giving you the chance to, like, build relationships, kind of Fire Emblem Awakening style, like, those newer Fire Emblem games is honestly what it reminded me of, building those relationships between characters. And so, yeah, I am genuinely surprised by how much of a game this is.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Enough. Yeah, I mean, like, the previous game was an iOS game, and it was really good for what it was.
It was a fun little iOS thing, but it was very straightforward. It was very much, here's a cool fan servicey thing you can play. This, it's also beautiful, like we were saying.
Yes,
it has that pop-up book look.
It has this pop-up book look, so it is very faithful. It's completely faithful to the design of the beach city in the show.
Yeah.
They do render it in C in 3D, but it's the kind of, like, cel-shaded, line art heavy 3D where any given screenshot could just as easily look like a shot from the show.
Right.
Like,
if you're watching this on video, there's B-roll.
I'm putting it in here. and like you're saying, like, the city itself has this really nice, like, pop-up. Like I think I said, it looks like a cardboard diorama.
It almost looks a lot like the Paper Mario.
I was going to say, it looks very much like
If I could interject, my favorite part of the gameplay was actually when Greg needed to get past a particular barrier.
Yeah.
And then had little, like, symbols on the screen showing it was like an Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. It was like those parts in Wind Waker where you have to get Medley or the other one and have them play the song to open the door of the next dungeon.
Yeah, like Greg's guitar was basically the Ocarina.
And he was saying, our guy who was showing us through this Zach, Zach was saying there's going to be a lot of that in the full game. Like, they took some thing about dungeon design in a very distinct way, where, like, sometimes there will be puzzles that maybe are optional, where if you happen to have the right character in your party, you can get past them, but if you don't, you just fucking don't. You have to backtrack to the last warp pad to change characters, because the warp pads from the show are where you go to, like, switch characters, who's in your party, all that stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I really liked that. So it was snake pattern with all the arrows, and you had to, like, sort of Guitar Hero, sort of, like, DDR your way through some guitar riffs to break down this wall.
It was really cool,
And then there's Connie. When you're controlling Connie, you can slash grass like your Link and all this sort of stuff, you know.
Or explore behind waterfalls.
Yeah, that's the other thing. There's a whole crafting system, too.
Yeah,
I forgot about
the glyphs or whatever you pick up.
I keep forgetting that there's all these systems in place because it's a Cartoon Network game on a children's cartoon. You wouldn't expect this amount of depth in there, but it's there. There are these minerals that are, I guess, connected to the prism creature who you're trying to save. That you're collecting along the way, and you craft those to sort of upgrade the power that your weapons do. You don't get different weapons or anything, obviously, just because, like, Steven Universe is such a, like, signature move and signature weapon and signature tool heavy show. You know, everyone's got their thing. But you can upgrade what those tools can do. I'm really impressed with that. It's coming out later this summer. It's going to be on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. They said no distinct plans. They were ready to announce about anything beyond that. They just wanted to get those first two platforms set first.
And digital only, correct?
Digital only, which is a shame. If it was physical, I would absolutely get the physical. But I will play it either way. So that is easily the biggest surprise of the show floor for me so far.
Yeah.
I heard sirens in the background.
If you hear sirens, Mike, before they come and get you for all your horrible mic crimes, why don't you tell us what your favorite thing
and
encouragements of our
mic crimes.
Here real quick.
Go for it.
Chug
cam.
I've been the designated driver this whole trip.
this is my chance to drink. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not an alcoholic. This is just tonight.
We're going to change that.
Because any other podcast
we've all been on, well, you and I, we haven't claimed a six-pack to ourselves.
True.
Yes. I've watched you do it on webcam a couple times.
I think that the couple podcasts that I've been on, I've been trashed. So I got two favorite games, actually. My first one is going to be Sonic Mania.
Ooh. Okay.
We did not have an appointment for, but we did wait in line for probably a good 45 minutes to play.
Which is surprisingly short, considering what the lines for some stuff's been.
And it went pretty quick, because this E3, this is our first E3. And this particular one is the first E3 that they let people, like, just regular people buy tickets for.
General public.
We met some, and it's good and bad. When we were in line during the Sonic, for Sonic Mania, it was good, because we got to speak to a few awesome fans of video games.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it made the line go by quicker, which made E3 not as bad. So we got through the line really quick, and me and Frank both got to play the game. We both split levels. I picked the Green Zone, correct?
You did Green Hills. Green Hill Zone. I did Mirage Saloon.
Yes, and Green Hill Zone was awesome. I mean, I felt like I was playing the original Green Hill Zone, and it felt completely... It felt smooth. It felt like I was playing an old Sonic game on an original Sega Genesis console. The music was perfect. It sounded like they were using the old Yamaha
chip. Yeah.
It kept me going. I was enthused to play it because the music was perfect. And the boss battle was cool, and everything felt as it should, but there was a few things here and there that weren't in the original Green Hill Zone, which kept me on my toes. So, like, for instance, when I was talking to Frank about this, when I was able to get the fire element...
The flame shield.
Yeah, the flame shield. I hit a spring which bounced me on top of one of the wooden spike, spinny...
Death traps.
Platform, yeah. And what the flame shield did was it actually burned the piece of wood, so it dropped me back down and said, "Hey, fucker, you think you know Sonic. You don't know Sonic anymore. You gotta start doing this again." So, and
Sonic, you thought you knew.
Yeah, and that was cool, because I was like, oh my god, like, this is a new Sonic game. And
I
loved every minute of it. So, you know, I did have some problems with the... I was using an Xbox controller, which I am not used to, because I do not like the D-pad on the Xbox One controller.
That's fair.
But I have my pre-order for the Switch, which also doesn't have a D-pad, so I'm going to be using the Pro controller a lot.
Yeah.
I think once that comes out, that's gonna be awesome. Especially the collector's edition. It comes with the Sega Genesis, and it has Sonic on it, and it has a power button on there. When you hit it, it says
Is
Sega.
That the collector's edition?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's good.
But it does not come with a physical copy, though.
Oh.
It comes with a digital download in the package, which kind of sucks. But the
things inside are cool, though.
Yeah.
Other than that, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a few cool collector's editions. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was about the Undertale one earlier.
The Mirage Saloon Zone is pretty cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that, like, everyone talks about Emerald Hill because it's been in Sonic 4.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically a remake of the first state, or Sonic 2 has its own version of it, you know, Emerald Hill Zone.
Yeah.
So, but Mirage Saloon was its own totally new stage for the game, and it really gave you some insight into the developer's direction. Headcanon has done an awesome job with this one. This level feels like it was ripped out of, like, it belongs to Sonic and Knuckles, honestly, in the way it's designed. It's really, really creative. You're zipping through, like, a dusty desert, racing through saloons, doing, like, the signature, like, loop-de-loops and whatnot. But then next thing you know, you land in the chamber of a six-gun, and you're fired off into the distance and, like, smashing through barrels and stuff like that. Or running across jets of water like a mixture of, like, Jesus and the Blue Man Group. And it's awesome. Like, it's a really cool level.
And it was cool because we decided to pick different levels to get different experiences. And the whole time I'm playing the Green Hill Zone, which... Again, it is a little bit different. It's trying to show people that the game is different. But I'm sitting there looking at Frank's screen going, holy shit, look at all this new stuff going on. This looks awesome. I can't wait to jump into that, too.
And it's new, but it feels really in tune with the other Sonic games. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like someone found a dusty old cart from 1995 in a Sega warehouse.
Yeah.
And it was a Sonic game that was supposed to land on the Genesis.
Yeah.
The awnings of the saloons are like the pinball flippers from Casino Zone from Sonic 2.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like, fling yourself up and launch yourself onto a bunch of targets and shit like that.
That's awesome.
Bounce around and, again, land in the chamber of the guns. Yeah. They spin around. You launch yourself into the distance. It's really cool. The only thing that sucked is while yours was two acts and you got a boss fight.
Right.
The Mirage Saloon is only one act right now, so we didn't really get a taste of what to expect from boss fights or mid-bosses. But, you know, the game comes out in August, so...
Very soon. Which is surprising, because at first we thought it wasn't coming out until September.
8th,
Amazon changed their date a few different times, but it was just a placeholder date, so we're good now, but... also, a few different things with the Green Hill Zone was there's a lot of ziplining going on now.
Right, right.
The whole level's filled with ziplining. But the ziplines make the level seem even faster than they originally were, and they always put you in a part of the stage where you're bouncing all around on different springs, and it's very quick, and it's very smooth, and it's very polished. And the cops are coming for us. Let's hide the beers.
Nope, it's an ambulance. We're not...
Okay.
We're not...
That's for us later. That's for Mike later.
After
he's done himself.
We haven't committed any podcast or YouTube crimes yet.
Yes. That's later tonight.
Yeah.
The second game I wanted to get into, which I'm going to admit now, I do not watch Dragon Ball Z. I have a coworker, hello Steve, that watches it. And I hear the noise, the screaming all night long when I'm at work. I hear, and I'm like, what the fuck is he watching? But I played that fighting game today, and I'm going to start watching the show like tomorrow, because that fighting game fucking blew me away.
I could not
believe how good it was. I was like, this is totally insanity. I've played Marvel vs. Capcom, and I am not a fighting game person.
Yeah. Right.
But I do get into Marvel vs. Capcom because it's just a total, like...
Chaos.
It's just chaos in like, a bottle. It's just everything's so, like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm pulling this off, and I'm just hitting a couple buttons. Dragon Ball Z is Marvel vs. Capcom times 10. It's just... It's amazing. I loved every minute of it.
It's got a little bit of King of Fighters flavor to it, too, though, because Arc mm-hmm. System works, you know. They've taken, they usually do their one-on-one battles with Guilty Gear, you know, and Persona Ultimax and all that, Persona 3 Arena. Mm-hmm. But this time, it's a 3-versus-3 team battle, where you can choose your teams. Now, right now, there's only 6 playable characters.
Yeah, 6 confirmed right now.
Goku, yeah, Gohan, Cell, Boo...
Vegeta, Frieza.
And Frieza. Yes. And, you know, you can make these teams you're choosing, and you can tag in and out. If a character's tagged out, they heal.
Yeah.
But it is just total insanity.
It's
like,
amazing.
You know, they've taken the over-the-top action of the Guilty Gear games, mm-hmm. like, and just refined it to absolute perfect. It's perfect chaos. It's insane.
Yeah. The whole time we were playing, we were just giggling because we couldn't believe what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I was playing as Frieza, and I knocked Mike into the air, and then next thing you know, you see the little dash into the sky, and both characters fly up, and we're even higher, and I hit him about 15 more times, and then we dashed up even higher in the sky, to the point where we look down, and the Earth is a speck, and I drop an elbow on his head, and we both crash into the ground. Yeah. And this whole thing took about 5 seconds.
He won the match, by the way, but it came down to the very end. Like, it was literally... And I suck at fighting games.
Yeah. Right.
But I gotta admit, I was having, like, an extreme amount of fun the whole time I was playing. Like, I loved every minute
of it. It's so fluid, and, you know, Arc System Works have done a fantastic job with Guilty Gear Xrd mastering that 2.5D look of just beautiful cartoony sprites.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they've really made all these battles feel like they're, like, cool battles that could have happened in the show.
They are, but the visuals are so vibrant. It just looks like the cartoon brought to life. And, mm-hmm. you hear this a lot, but it's absolutely true. It looks phenomenal.
Right, and when the match would first start, the characters were kind of, like, first getting into, you know, the fight. Like, it felt like I was watching, like, an anime. I was like, this is amazing.
Oh, and then if you knock a character out, the next one comes in, and they're just smacking the shit out of each other and bashing elbows, and then it gets into the actual match.
It was awesome.
There is just never a dull moment. It is an absolute spectacle to behold. And, I mean, we had the closed-door session with Bandai Namco earlier today. And they said that while the game was announced last week, it's actually been in development for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So, and it shows. Like I said, this is just announced, but the hands-on time we've spent with it at Bandai Namco's booth, this game is un-fucking-believable.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get my hands on it.
Early next
And I can't
year.
Wait to start watching it, like, because I do want to... Yeah. I want to get into, like, the characters and the lore before I start playing it, and... Right. I think with them creating this and the fighting scene as a whole, most of the people that are in the fighting scene are probably already Dragon Ball Z fans,
right.
But the people that aren't are going to be. So this is big.
That's awesome.
Hey everybody, it's me again. I'm still not at E3. They didn't let me go. I'm a cynical bastard who would probably end up getting into a fist fight with one of the PR reps. But I did want to do the ad break here so that Jay doesn't have to worry about it. So, the Hey Poor Podcast is the official podcast of www.heypoorplayer.com, and that's your one-stop shop for video game and pop culture news, reviews, hey, and editorials. If you like what you've heard here and you don't want to wait till next Wednesday to hear more, that's a place where you can read all of our writing and the full reviews of some of the games we've talked about on the show. You can also follow us at HeyPoorPlayer on Twitter or Facebook, and you can check out our YouTube channel, which is the home of Second Opinion, I, Coleman is Doomed, Shrek's Fallout Swamp, Nathanime Games eventually, some new project Jay's doing that he doesn't want me to say the title of, and just a whole bunch of Let's Plays, features, and reviews separate from the site proper. Beyond that, you can find our usual hosts. I'm at Last Space Marine on Twitter, Anthony Spivey is at Virtual Spivey on Twitter, Nathaniel Terencio is at Blazer Hoodie on Twitter, and Jay Petriquin is at Extreme Salsa Ing on Twitter. You can also check out my other podcast at starwurstcast.tumblr.com. It's about Star Wars, and you can check out Nathan's portfolio at nathanielterencio.com. We also have the Hey Poor Player forums, which you can find by clicking the link on our main site. That's something we're trying to get started as a way to interact with you guys, the Hey Poor Player community. Unlike reading articles or watching videos with adblock off, the forums don't benefit us in a monetary sense, but it's a great way for you to get in touch with us. So, if you want to ask me why I hate Wolfenstein The New Order, or you want to, talk to Jay about Pokemon or something, that seems like something he's interested in, the forums are where you could talk to us directly about all of our work. And, we're not doing any questions, as I said, so that's gonna be it for now. We do, and I always forget this part, every week we like to give a shout-out to somebody who's not on the podcast, but who works for Hey Poor Player. And this week, I want to give a shout-out to Hal Olson. He's one of our pretty new writers, but he is, he's very talented. I really enjoy his writing. I think he's quickly established himself as one of our best. And I wanted to single him out this week, because this week he wrote an article that was called, I don't remember the exact title, but it was basically asking the question of whether or not game reviews matter anymore, since so many people are getting their game news through Twitch, or through YouTube, or simply through word of mouth. And not only was it, I thought, an extremely insightful take on the subject, but it was also a pretty ballsy thing to publish on a site that makes most of its money by publishing game reviews. So, I really admire him. I think he's got a great future. So, good on ya, Hal. Alright, I'm gonna get back to the people you actually care about now. This is the last you'll hear from me. Bye-bye.
Dragon Ball Z sounds wonderful. Dragon Ball...
Yeah.
What's the name? Yeah. Fighters Z?
Fighters. Yeah.
Fighter Sound of
Dragon
Mosquitoes.
Ball Fighter Z. Or Dragon Ball Fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Fighter Z if you're in Canada.
Yes.
A book?
That wasn't the only cool thing we saw at Bandai Namco today, though.
Yeah, so you guys all killed it. I was away to do something else, but you three got to experience a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you want to go first, Randy?
Sure.
Go
ahead. I got to try Ace Combat 7 with the VR setup that they had back in the booth. And oh my god.
little timer.
If there were ever a game that deserved the VR treatment, it's Ace Combat. And boy, does it fucking deliver. It's such a cool sensation going out of the belly of your aircraft carrier up the elevator and looking around and seeing like all the aircraft maintainers and stuff bustling around and all the flight deck crew, you know, doing their thing. And then when you take off, now for E3, this is my first time actually flying, going 3,000 miles across country. So I've gotten a taste for it really quick, and it's fresh on my mind. The sensation of taking off the flight deck of this aircraft carrier, and that sense of speed and the way you lift off, so fucking believable. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And, you're flying through the clouds, and you actually notice the condensation on the glass of your cockpit, which is just awesome. You see, like, the smudges in the glass. But despite, like, all the frantic barrel rolls and loops and dodging and, you know, skimming over the water, not once in these crazy dogfights did I ever feel any kind of discomfort. And, I mean, I know that I lost my VR legs a long time ago.
Sure.
I have a PSVR and I have a Rift, and I use them both very frequently. But even still, I've played a lot of games that are much more deliberately paced. About 5 or 10 minutes, a little bit of discomfort, like a... Farpoint comes to mind.
Okay, yeah.
Where you just, you know, it's getting hot in that mask, you're starting to feel a little queasy, you want to take it off.
Eats on the space around your eyes.
I didn't get that sensation at all with Ace Combat 7, and it felt fucking great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that these VR missions are actually going to be part of the main story campaign, but I was talking to the Bandai Namco rep, I can't recall his name and I feel bad right now, but he had said that, you know, earlier I heard there was only going to be a couple missions in VR, But he promised there's going to be several hours of VR content for the title.
Great. Okay.
Which is several hours more than, you know, Mike and I had expected recently.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, because I thought that was going to be a total VR experience.
Right.
And then when I heard it was cut down to a mission, I'm like, well, I'm not buying that game anymore.
You're getting images of that little, like, that little distraction that came out with Call of Duty Infinite last year.
Right, yeah.
The Jackalist game, which is a total throwaway.
That's bad. Yeah.
But this is far from it. It's such a great feeling to do a loop-de-loop and look over your head and see an enemy MiG, like, staring at you. You know, you're looking into their cockpit upside
down.
That's
awesome.
It's a trippy sensation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And looking over your shoulder and seeing your jet, your afterburners just spit fire. It's so... It's fucking fantastic. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for it. Yeah. You had played the non-VR version.
Yeah, the non-VR version was cool, but I was wishing I was playing the VR version the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like Ace Combat. I was at a particular mission. I didn't have the volume on the game up, so I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing, honestly.
Right. Yeah,
but I was just flying around and figuring stuff out, and when I was finally able to take down an enemy, it gave me that typical Ace Combat feeling. Like, you felt like you accomplished something.
That time you chewed that wing off with your machine gun from, like, 10 feet away.
Yeah, and that was cool.
Into the fireball.
And there was one part of the game where I actually went up, and I started to come down, and I was literally on top of an enemy. I was coming toward him, and I started firing at him. And I just hit him at the right second, and he just was gone. And I was like, oh, that felt good. That felt like Ace Combat.
It sucks. So, but Ace Combat's been delayed till early next year.
Yeah, a lot of delays.
A lot of delays, yeah. But it looks fantastic.
Yes.
I can't wait to get into that. Now, you had played another game at the Bandai Namco booth, didn't you, Nate?
I played two games at the Bandai Namco booth. I'll start with the one that's, like, my thing, because y'all know I'm a weeb. You listen to this podcast, you've seen my videos, y'all know I'm a weeb. But, like, there was this game called Gundam Versus, and this is essentially every Gundam fanboy's, like, wet dream come to life. You literally, like, essentially the game is sort of like an Armored Core kind of thing, where you fight waves of enemies and go through certain missions.
Yeah.
Now, while the last Gundam game had the option to customize Gundam from different kits, this one is more set. Like, you play Gundams from different anime, and essentially they're all set. You can choose, like, different special modes, and I think that's, like, from what I've seen, that's, like, the most of the customization they're willing to show right now.
Right.
But the cool thing is that, like, while it lacks customization, there are 97 mobile suits in that game.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
And as a Gundam nerd, I went through every series, and they had the weird ones, like the ones that didn't come out here, like freaking Gundam Age, and checked out every, like, main series Gundam, along with the weird franchises with its protagonist, like, mobile suit, was in that game.
Okay.
Even stuff that was very, very new to this year, like Thunderbolt and Iron-Blooded Orphans. So that was cool. I picked a Gundam from Reconquista, and then you also have an option to choose a partner mobile suit who goes with you on the missions and actually helps you out, and it's sort of like an assist thing. It's really cool. And the best thing about the game is, like, it captures the feeling of being in a Gundam anime, and I don't know if people have seen Gundam before, but, like, when you see mobile suits fight each other, it's, like, in the most bombastic, like, robots shouldn't move this fast, like, superheroes or anime characters, but, like, they do.
It's over the top for the sake of the glory of watching robots fight.
Yeah, like, I was literally just shooting lasers out of, like, 8 different, like, weird rifle things coming out of my wings, and it was freaking amazing, and I was blowing up, like, these giant mobile armors, and, like, the cool thing is that, like, after each round, like, the goal for each mission is, like, you basically clear a wave. After each round, you get to upgrade different parts of the mobile suit. And these mobile suits have different things. So you can upgrade the melee, or maybe you want to update the blaster, or maybe you just want more defense, maybe you want more speed. It depends. And, like, from what I'm kind of gauging, because I did play two different mobile suits, they all kind of, while they are all Gundams, they all function very differently. Like, one was, I noticed, particularly better in the melee, like, aspect, but his rifle was, like, pitiful. Like, it was missing. Like, it had this weird thing where, like, it moved really slowly, and even if it hit, it was, like, really sad. It was, like, kind of like a dent.
Wet squirt gun.
Yeah, and it, like, but the rifle got stronger when he did his special. So when he's in his normal, the beam saber's better. So, like, it's a really cool action game, and the fact that there's more mobile suits, and they did tell me, there's going to be 97 when this game launches. That 97 that was that I played are the 97 that are going to be in the game.
Right. Oh.
But there will be more with DLC.
Oh,
he did kind of... I cannot find my
speculation.
Words. Thank you.
There you go. You were on the track. You're on the right path. We're all tired.
I got too lit, and it's 12 a.m.
Ah, he's lit himself.
But he did say there will be more of a DLC, and he did kind of, and like speculation, it might be from the newer series that are coming out, because there is, there's a new Gundam coming out, there's a movie coming out, and there's another, there's a third season of Build Fighters, which is been popular in Japan.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that. The other game I played was Ni no Kuni 2. Jay, hi.
I'm so sad. This is why I didn't. I was very happy to cover the other stuff I was covering instead of the time. But this was the main reason I was sad I was not able to join you guys.
Understandably.
I am a huge fan of the first Ni no Kuni. One of my favorite. Like, it's one of the reasons I got a PS3 near the end of PS3's life cycle.
Yeah.
That and the Uncharted games, honestly. Tell me about Ni no Kuni 2.
Okay.
Nathan. Please tell me they're not fucking me on this.
No.
It's fucking beautiful. The game's amazing.
Yeah, okay.
Behind the scenes,
yeah, I jumped into it too.
Yeah.
The closed door meeting.
Yeah, we got a closed door meeting about the game, and like they went into a lot of detail about the team and their vision. And I don't know if like a lot of that, I don't know how much of that we could say because it was a private meeting.
It wasn't embargoed.
Okay. Oh, there's no embargo. Okay, well, so essentially, they got the Dream Team back. That's what they announced. Like the director of the first game, the composer from all the Ghibli films.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just, like, if Ni no Kuni 1 was sort of like, hey, we can do this anime art style and make it into a game and you don't feel like you're missing out on the anime part or the video game part, this is going, doing that, but 10 times better.
Okay.
They are really learning, and they're like, and they really put this emphasis on, like, we want this to be a game that you can consider, like, a Ni no Kuni game, but, like, an amalgamation of, like, the recent trends of Eastern RPGs and Western RPGs. Like,
nice.
I got that, like, I kind of, like, when I was playing it and when I saw, like, the gameplay footage, I got, like, immediate flashbacks to Final Fantasy XV, because that's kind of, like, what they were going for, too. It's, like, they wanted to make an open-world Western game, but keep all, like, the, you know, the linear plot and the characters of, like, you know, an Eastern RPG.
Right.
And Ni no Kuni does not disappoint from what I played. The combat is super smooth.
Yeah, you're saying it's changed a bit from the first one.
Yes, the first one was
a
turn-based combat system.
Yeah.
This one is an action combat system more closely tied to something like Tails or Star Ocean.
Now, what are any little, the little helpers we have? Are they the Hiddlings? Or what are they?
Yeah, I forgot what
Hiddly D's, was it?
Hiddly D's.
They had a super cute name.
That sounds good.
I got it.
I think it was Hiddly D's.
Yeah, we have notes on it.
We have plenty of notes.
They're called... Higgly D? Yeah, that's it.
Higgly D Heroes. Higgly D Heroes and Higgly D's. So they're these little, like...
They're elemental.
Yeah. They're like the things reminiscent from, like, other Ghibli films like My Neighbor Totoro or Spirited Away.
The Forest Children in Mononoke is kind of what I said.
Yeah, exactly. And these little things, these little cute little light bulb things
are
just scattered throughout the battlefield. And they're essentially like assists. They're around and, like, periodically, because of the way the AI works, they will help you out in certain aspects. And there's different types. And, what I kind of got from playing the game, and I think... Because I played it, I got a better understanding of it, because I thought that you could use them anytime.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're actually used at specific parts of the battle, and you have to kind of time it. Like, is it appropriate to use this thing that the Higgly D's are, like, giving me? Like, should I follow the assist that they're giving me, or should I just wait and kind of, like, you know, wait for a better time to use it? Yeah. And there's a lot of strategy. So, like, even though it's an action game, there is, like, moments of, like, you know, I should probably wait this out, or hey, I should do a spell here, or wait, this Higgly D is better than this Higgly D for this scenario. So
Higgly
D.
Did you do the boss battle?
I did. There's two fights for the demo.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the trial, which is where how you get like your main power thing. It's sort of like your like the very first step to becoming a king or like a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is like one of the boss fights in the later part of the game, which is a guardian of a city, because each kingdom has their own respective guardian.
Okay.
And
these are the kingmakers.
The kingmakers. That's
right.
It
was Longfang, I believe.
Longfang was super cool, because I not only do I love that like Eastern Chinese mythology sort of aesthetic, man, like it was just a beautiful fight in general. Like,
yeah.
I mean, watching the game at 60 FPS on a 1080p monitor, just running as smooth as it is, looking like a Ghibli film that I could control, was super satisfying. Every hit and every animation was so smooth. Like, not only was it like watching an anime, but like it functioned mechanically very well. Like, every hit I felt intentional, and when like I got hit, it felt like, nah, like that was my fault. I didn't dodge it really. It wasn't. It didn't feel like the jankness of other JRPGs, like, because like JRPGs who do action combat do sometimes mess that up.
Sure.
So Ni no Kuni, from an aesthetic standpoint, from a thematic standpoint, feels very much close to Ni no Kuni 1, except they're amplifying it by 10. And now, like, it's complemented with a very good action RPG combat system that feels very appropriate for this day and age, but still feels faithful to what it's trying to do.
Right.
Yeah. There's no, they also mentioned that there are kingdom management parts, which are in the demo. Really
We didn't get into that.
Yeah, it's not
you
in
build
the
your
demo.
Own town,
yeah, it wasn't in the demo.
And you can, like, assign different people to different parts of the town.
Yeah.
Like, to upgrade your technology or your military capabilities.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool. I didn't get to try it out in the demo, but the YouTube can explain what he kind of brought about, like, with the kingdom management and how it affects gameplay.
Yeah, yeah, you'll find different players or different characters across the world. And what you can do is appoint them to different positions in your town, that your kingdom that you're building. And they can upgrade your technology tree, or your weapon capabilities, your military.
Cool.
And all those are going to help Evan actually reclaim his throne in the end.
Yeah,
wow.
And I like how that thematically fits. Like, the more Evan becomes, like, the figure of a king, the more people come to him. And it, like, in turn, helps him become the figure of a king to other people. Right. And, like, that symbolic relationship between your followers and you being a hero. Kind of, and then, like, how it, like, mechanically helps you out is super interesting and cool. And, like, I think I experienced that in a game I recently reviewed, Regalia. And that did that very similar, and that was a very similar thing where it's, like, you get followers, and then it helps you mechanically combat because they give you armor or they give you stuff. And, like, that is, when it works, like, it makes me very excited because I do, like, city building, like, kingdom building macro, like, kind of gameplay.
Awesome. No, it's definitely a cool little extra direction to take the series.
Yeah, and it's cool, because, like, honestly, like, if that wasn't in Ni no Kuni 2, people probably wouldn't bat an eye. They'd probably be like, oh, that's fine. Like, but it's in there, and it looks solid.
Yeah, because it is there, it feels like a sequel that is expanding what Ni no Kuni can be and what can be part of that
exactly
now franchise.
Now, what was it? Was it September 22nd? Is that the release date on that?
Was it?
Or no, that's,
I thought November.
That's Project Cars, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was November.
That was another Bandai Namco demo. They kept us very busy today.
Yeah,
I don't have a release date on that, but I did want to make a point on the I also did the boss fight.
Yeah.
And they said the composer from the original game came back, and the boss fight music was like amazing. Like, it kept me into the battle.
Was.
It had highs and lows as I was fighting the battle.
Yeah.
Like, when I was able to actually attack the Dragon Longhorn's claws that were coming down onto the battleground.
Yeah.
The music had high pitches.
Yeah,
and when
he backed up, it dynamically changed with the fight.
Wow. It felt like it did. I don't know if it was intentional, but it worked out that way.
Yeah, it felt like the game was sort of like a movie score, but you were in control of it the whole time. Like, the pace was set by you. I'm not surprised. It's the guy who did every Studio Ghibli, like, orchestra, soundtrack.
Those are really high marks. I mean,
yeah.
On the top.
Yeah, so, I mean,
the top tier of emotionally evocative music.
But the point is, in terms of presentation, Ni no Kuni 2 is an 11 out of 10. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
In terms of presentation, and on top of that, it's also just
it's
a good game to play.
So, in short, Bandai Namco fucking killed it this evening.
Ramona,
thank you so much for letting us in, for letting us go behind the scenes to check these games out, because they were fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we're super excited to see what Bandai Namco does for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
We're hitting that hour mark, maybe we should
Yeah, that's fine. So, obviously we've had other stuff we've seen, we've had other stuff we want to talk about, but we don't want to spend a whole endless thing doing that.
Yep.
If you want to find out more about what we've looked at and what we've wanted to write about and talk about in these first couple days of E3, you can go right on over to heypoorplayer.com, where we have been just tirelessly at work, tirelessly until one of us keels over.
There's been lots of parties.
We have been running ourselves ragged.
We'll do better, I promise. But guys,
E3 is busy.
The parties weren't for complete enjoyment. We did make some contacts.
Absolutely.
So,
but you can read stuff like coverage on a lot of what we've been talking about.
you can read stuff. While they were doing that, I went and saw Daedalic's new upcoming game, State of Mind,
yep.
which we're going to be writing about,
yep.
as well as some little impressions pieces on some other games from
yeah.
all of us.
We'll have Yakuza 6 up
yep.
tonight.
Yakuza 6 will be up tonight.
Yep.
Tomorrow, we're going and talking to... Can we, like, mention who were some of you?
Yeah, by all means.
We'll get, yep. We're going to be talking to NIS. We're going to be talking to XSEED. First
yep.
thing I'm going to be doing is bolting and trying to get some hands-on time with Mario Odyssey.
We have an interview with Kinshiro Takaki, the producer.
Yeah, and there will be a video.
Boobs.
Sorry. And there will be a video about
that. On a
scale
of one to boobs, whose boobs are the best boobs?
Look forward to that gem and more tomorrow,
yes.
folks.
Yeah. yeah.
Natsumi, thank you. Who else did we see? Natsumi, we saw Sega.
Sega.
Total War 2.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm doing impressions on that, too. That was a great game. I almost beat hard mode. I'm actually good at video games, I swear.
Thank you, Total War. Thank you, Polyarc. Thank you, Daedalic. Thank you, Cartoon Network.
Thank you, L.A., for housing us, because we are garbage.
Thank you, L.A., for being a cool city to wander around for a little bit.
Yep.
It's weird how we've had, like, the total Hollywood experience the past couple of days.
We really have.
These weird Delaware boys here aren't used to this.
And for people watching the video, thank you for dealing with all the technical issues. We are outside a hotel. I am one camera person, so...
It's close to 1 a.m. Yeah. We got stuff to write right now.
Yeah, and thank you for dealing the audio issues, too. There's cars. All deal right, with
smart
it.
Cars. All right. Yes. And the sound of those cars is similar to the sound of us zooming off to do more hard work and E3 stuff. For more of that, keep your eyes on HeyPoorPlayer.com. Thank you. That was weird.
We got beers upstairs.